there again, and welcome to Musings on Golf, where we have great stories aplenty. And with so much going on in the golf world, we certainly should. We've got the Tour Championship coming this week. We've got Ryder Cup picks about a week out. And we've got an unbelievable guest today in Armin Katayan, co-writer of Gambler, the new book that talks a lot about Phil Mickelson. Bob Bupka, my dear co-host, you've been away for a couple of weeks. I know you're catching up with a few things. We talked with Armin a short time ago. That interview is just off the charts. But I understand you have a pretty good story, Bob's story of the week, based on what happened over the past 2 weeks away from the mic.
Well, it's pretty amazing, Kelly. I'd been contacted before coming in the radio business. I worked full-time in the automobile business. And I worked at a small dealership. We had an owner that was from Germany. We had a couple of salespeople, a service manager, and myself. So as I planned my trip out to my home territory, the end of Long Island, out in the Hamptons, one of the salesmen said, "Hey, you know, we're getting the whole gang together. Why don't you surprise us and show up?" So I jumped at the opportunity. So we meet at this restaurant. I'm there ahead of time. I greet all four people that come in. And Kelly, it's the first time in 50 years that I've seen any of those four guys.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, it was amazing. Oh. 50 years. That, you know, that's not like 5 weeks or 10 years or 20 years. 50 years. And we spent a delightful 2 or 3 hours reminiscing. And, you know, the one thing I came away with, which overwhelmed me, I said, wow, all those guys got old looking. I don't know how that happened.
Yes.
But I come to find out, I said, how did that come across? And they said, Bob, they all thought you got old. So it was even. It was even.
Family and friends, they mean the world to you, don't they?
Absolutely, absolutely. And at one gathering, I had my three children, all of my grandchildren, and, you know, you just don't get opportunities like that, especially at my age. My brother, my sister, my children, their children, it was fabulous. I missed Musings on Golf, but 2 weeks off probably did me a lot of good.
Well, we had tape recorded those interviews in advance and with Nick Price last week. We are live today, August 22nd, 2023. Bob, glad that you and Janice had such a wonderful time. And a great time was had as well by Victor Hovland at the BMW Championship at Olympia Fields outside of Chicago. 28 he closes with on the back nine on Sunday for a 61. What a victory, Bob. And remember when we talked with Lee Trevino a few months back, how he feels about Hovland. Bob, this guy is, he should be in contention every week. He's going to win so much.
Yeah, he's got something very special. You just don't see it. I mean, he's fearless, number one on the golf course.
Right.
Whenever it comes to being a little bit conservative or maybe attacking that whole location, he's quick to go right at the hole and shoot 61 at the BMW Championship. Are you kidding me? You know, the happiest person besides Victor certainly had to be Luke Donald, because Victor shows all indications of being a superstar in the upcoming Ryder Cup competitions.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And I know the victory meant the world to Victor, as you'll hear in this clip right now.
To win at a place like this and amongst the best players in the world, it's pretty cool. And to do it that way, making 7 birdies the last 9 holes, and yeah, to beat those guys, that was pretty cool. I don't think I've ever shot a lower score than 61. I've shot 61 a couple of times. It's just one of those days that just everything seemed to flow and seemed to happen. And I guess I just didn't try to fight it. I just relied on my instincts and my intuition and worked out this time. We're right back at it next week at East Lake, and and I'm sure it'll be hot and we'll be sweating a lot. So I'm definitely feeling that it's been a lot of golf, but it seems like the more I've played recently, I seem to play better. So just need to lean into that, and hopefully we have another good week next week.
Bob, I also think Victor Hovland's very relatable. He always seems to have a smile on his face. People like him, upbeat. And I think people gravitate to that in addition to his outstanding play. Second win this year, really good golf courses. He's winning. He beat Denny McCarthy in a playoff at the Memorial. He's won five times in all now, I believe, on the PGA Tour. Big-time game. And, yeah, an absolute threat in a good way for Europe to get that Ryder Cup victory back next month outside of Rome.
And you received some good news that Danny McCarthy has agreed to be a guest on Musings on Golf. We're going to be looking forward to that. And if you think Victor Hovland had a smile on his face when he shot that 61, He was just told that he won $3.6 million.
Not a bad 4 days. And Scotty Scheffler has already set the PGA Tour single season record in earnings. And we have the Tour Championship coming up this week with the low 30. Unfortunately, Denny McCarthy, his father, Dennis, I grew up playing junior golf with. Denny was just on the outside looking in. He's going to be our guest, though, next week. And I know Denny will have a lot of terrific things to say about a fabulous year for him and a lot of bright days ahead. Before we get into the Tour Championship and all, this interview that we did with Armin Katayan that you're going to hear in a little bit in regards to Billy Walters, who many have called, and rightfully so, the Michael Jordan of gambling, was as crazy, the stories as crazy of 35 or 40 minutes as I've ever heard. And Phil Mickelson, the gambling that he went through for about 5 years was just a part of it. I mean, it's just like, this is a story. These are stories right out of like the movie Casino or Goodfellas. It's crazy stuff, Bob.
Yeah, it really is. And just to whet the appetite of our listeners, it's so crazy that a black swan is a huge part of the story that you're going to be able to listen to.
Absolutely. Hey, do you like the format, by the way? So we've got the Tour Championship coming up this week, and this has been in play for a number of years now, where Scottie Scheffler will start at 10 under par with a two-shot lead before the first ball is even struck, in this case over Victor Hovland, three over Rory McIlroy, etc. Do you like that format, Bob?
I do not like that format, but in defense of the format, I don't have any better idea.
Yeah.
So I've kind of accepted it. And quite frankly, if the powers at the PGA Tour think that this is the best that it can be and FedEx is happy with it, then I'm all for it.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you on that. I don't know of a better system as well. It just seems so awkward that you give anybody a lead going in. But Scheffler has certainly earned it, Bob. And it looks like maybe he's starting to make some putts. And if he is, there is no better ball striker in the world, and hasn't been for quite some time, than Scottie Scheffler. Let's segue to the Ryder Cup. So we've mentioned that in regards to Hovland. He'll be a major presence for the Europeans. The six U.S. players, the top six, have been determined with Scheffler, Wyndham Clark, Brian Harman, Patrick Cantlay, Max Homa, and Xander Schauffele. The other six... I think there's too many picks, by the way. I just think six picks is way too many, but that's what it is. Captain Zach Johnson will make those six picks a week from today on August 29th. And I know you and I have feelings about it, but I'd like to throw it out to our listeners and give them an opportunity. Our good friends at Titleist have provided us with some Pro V1 golf balls. And I'd like to give people an opportunity to please send to my email address. That's wkellyelbin@gmail.com. Send me the six picks that you have that you think that Captain Johnson will select on August 29th to round out the team. If we have more than one correct winner, I'll select that person by random and send you a dozen Pro V1 golf balls. Happy to do that. And it creates so much discussion and excitement, doesn't it, Bob? I think six is too many. But now is Ryder Cup time, man. That's what so many are talking about.
Yeah, you're right on the money there, Kelly. And thanks to the good people at Titleist for providing a little incentive to our listeners to see who they're going to come up with. I think our list that you'll be receiving on your email is going to be wide and varied, and I'm very excited about that opportunity to provide a dozen of the best golf balls ever made, the Pro V ones.
Absolutely. And again, starting from the time people hear this through up through the end of the day on Monday of next week, the 28th. Bob, again, as we head into this interview with Armin Katayan, I've read some of the book. I know you have read some of it as well. I'm amazed when it comes to Phil Mickelson, how he actually could focus on the actual playing of the game at such a high level with the amount of money that he bet. For me, if $100 is on the line, that's a lot of money. But for the amount of money that he bet on football, baseball, basketball, and supposedly wanted to bet on the 2012 Ryder Cup, it's way, way out of my league, and I think just about anybody else's league, except apparently Phil.
Yeah, apparently. And, you know, you think there was a lot of pressure on Phil? How about being on the first tee at your favorite club, and somebody suggests we're going to play a $10 Nassau, and you realize you only got $5 in your pocket. Do you think that'll motivate you to play well? I know it was for me. I said, man, I got to win because I don't have the money to pay up if I lose. So victory was always sweet.
So the new book is out today, Gambler, Secrets from a Life at Risk by Billy Walters, co-written by Armin Katayan, award-winning author and winner of 11 Emmy Awards. And you'll hear that interview with Armin right after this.
The all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X are designed to outperform. Created in Titleist R&D laboratories, manufactured in Titleist golf ball plants, and then validated by the best players in the world. These golf balls are longer and more consistent with unrivaled control. Outperform with the new Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X.
Welcome back to Musings on Golf. Bob, the book that so many have been talking about is officially out today, so the timing couldn't be better for us to be joined by the co-writer of Gambler, Secrets from a Life at Risk. He's a best-selling author and winner of 11 Emmy Awards, and the tales he writes about Billy Walters and Phil Mickelson, among others, are simply unbelievable. Armin Katayan, welcome to Musings on Golf.
Thank you, Kelly. Thanks, Bob.
You know, I'm fascinated by this book because I've been involved with Phil for 20 years, and, you know, so much of what's being discussed, quite frankly, disturbs me a lot. You know, I mean, golf, as I knew it in my early years, and I think same for you, Armin, is a gentleman's game. You know, none of this really ever surfaced, and now through this marvelous book that I've only read a little bit of, but I find it very difficult to put down, we're going to get the real story.
Well, we tried to be as factual as possible with Phil. And because there's, you know, the power of his celebrity, the power of his personality, it's a high wire act when you're dealing with allegations like we have in the book. The fact that Phil wanted to bet $400,000 on the 2012 Ryder Cup for the Americans to beat the Europeans. And he called Billy up and said, look, I want to make this bet. And Billy's reaction was, you know, exactly what it should be. Are you out of your mind? You're the Arnold Palmer of golf. What are you doing? Why are you doing this? And, you know, we say in the book, we don't know whether Phil made the bet. He has since come out publicly and denied that he made any kind of Ryder Cup bet, even though Billy didn't make that allegation. All he said he got the phone call about it. But what we did was, you know, some of the numbers in the Phil chapter, there's two chapters in the book really that relate to Phil out of the 28. The numbers to me, you know, Phil has already publicly admitted that he had an addiction. Those are his words, addiction to gambling, sports betting. But to have in a 4-year or 5-year period, depending upon how you look at it, 2010 to 2014, you know, to bet $110,000 to win $100,000. I think it was 1,151 times, and to bet $220 to win $200, 858 times. I'm not a math genius, but I did the math, and it's over $311 million in gross wagers just on those two kinds of bets alone. And there's plenty of others that go along with it. So to me, it was, it's just astonishing that those numbers are accurate, which they are. But, it's a complicated, almost a father-son relationship between Bill and Phil. And Billy saw a lot of himself in Phil's addictions and need for action. And in the end, that partnership that they had, that 5-year betting partnership, fractured over Phil's reluctance to testify or make a statement on Billy's behalf in a huge insider trading case that Billy was involved with in New York in 2017.
Our listeners would be very interested to know, Armin, how did Gambler come together, and how many people did you interview for this book?
Well, it's interesting. You almost have to go back to 1986. I was at Sports Illustrated at the time. I guess I was their top investigative writer and reporter for them. And we did this 32-page special report on gambling in America. And one of the sidebars that was part of that, stories that was part of that, was on the computer group. And Billy was a pivotal figure in that first computer syndicate that really crushed the books for about 5 years in the late 70s and early 80s. And I still have the file. I'm kind of weird that way. I still have that computer group file that I was heavily involved in. And Billy's name is all over that file as someone that was A, indicted, and B, was responsible for moving a lot of money for the computer group around the country. So when I got the call from a mutual friend who was representing Billy in a lot of his public relations and crisis communication stuff, he goes, "Do you know a guy named Billy Walters?" And I'm like, "You mean the computer group Billy Walters?" And he goes, "Yeah." I said, "Well, I know of him. I don't know him." He goes, "Well, he's working on this book." And this was in June of 2020. He wants to write his life story. And I said, "Well, I'd love to talk to him." So we talked for a couple of months. I interviewed him several different times. And eventually we made an agreement to collaborate beginning in September of 2020. And I literally spent 3 full years working on this book with Bill. I interviewed him hundreds of times, both in person and over the phone, down to the sort of the nitty gritty of the details. But then I also went ahead and interviewed about 60 other people that had intersected with Billy's life at various times. And it's just a unbelievable cast of characters, as you might imagine. Everybody from Doyle Brunson to Billy Baxter to Bobby Baldwin to Jack Binion to Billy's childhood friends to family members. And so that to me is really the strength of the book. Is it's, yes, it's Bill's story, but it's a lot of other people that helped us create the scenes and make sure that everything was accurate. And in the end, I did the math again, and I think I spent north of 7,000 hours on this book.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a lot of hours, boys. That's a lot of hours. But, Billy is he's a perfectionist. He wanted, this is he's only doing this once, and he wanted it to be as perfect could be. And he was willing to put in the time to make it as good as it possibly could be.
So pleased to be joined here on Musings on Golf by with Armin Katan, the co-writer of the new book out today, Gambler: Secrets from a Life at Risk. And Armin, as we'll discuss a little bit later, there's so many facets to this book, one of which is Billy really opening up and explaining in great detail his methodology for gambling. But you talked about the individuals here. And I remember playing golf a couple of years ago in Orlando, and we were in a group behind a guy named Dewey Tomko.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't know who Dewey Tomko was. The guy I was playing with said, "Yeah, Dewey Tomko, the guy in front of us, he'll bet, $10,000, $20,000, anything per hole."
Yeah.
I've read a good deal of the book, and one of the things that strikes me is that Billy says that on any given college football NFL weekend, he will have as much as $20 million in bets play each day. But it isn't just all about him. There are these cast of characters. Maybe could you give us a couple of stories? Maybe it's a Dewey Tomko. Maybe it's one of the guys you mentioned. But the cast of characters is long and crazy.
Oh, there's this. It's really a murderer's row of rounders, guys that are, one more colorful and crazy than the next. And you can go from, mobsters like Tony the Ant Spilotro, who was the inspiration for the Joe Pesci character in Casino. Just a man who had a fascination with industrial strength tools when he was torturing people. So you have that. Then you have people like Benny Binion, who is a mobster in Dallas who comes to Vegas and opens up the Horseshoe, and that becomes a centerpiece of the Las Vegas kind of glitter gulch scene downtown. And then you go to this group of Chip Reese, arguably the greatest poker player of all time. And then you have Doyle Brunson, another one who's a World Series of Poker multiple bracelet winner. And then, Bobby Baldwin, Billy Baxter, Stewie Unger, Dewey Tomko. There's just one after another. Puggy Pearson, another one that's straight out of Central Casting. Right. I'll tell you the one Puggy story. They're playing, and it's with Mike Sexton and his partner, and Puggy and Billy are playing partners, and it's the last hole, and Puggy hits a ball, and everybody thinks it's on the other side of the fairway, and they think it went in the water. They're not sure, and they can't really see Puggy. And in Vegas in those days, if you weren't cheating, you weren't trying, right? So it's right. Like if you didn't have grease on your club, or somebody was fooling around with the lofts of somebody else's, wedges, before a big match, you just weren't trying. And so Puggy gets up on the green, and he makes par. But the problem is, when Mike Sexton pulled the ball out of the hole, he looks at it and there's no logo on the ball. And when Puggy started the round, he was playing a ball that had the Lacoste logo on it. And Mike says to him, Puggy, you kind of tried to blank us here. What did you learn from this? He goes, oh, I tell you, I really learned a lesson here. And you think he's going to say, I'll never do that again. He goes, no, I'll just never play a logoed ball again. You think he's going to say, I'm so sorry, I tried to cheat you. But no. I learned my lesson. I'll never play a blanket logoed ball again. So, it was really, for me, it was just an embarrassment of riches. And you just go, okay, I got to tell the Michael O'Connor story. I got to tell the Gene McCarley. There's a story in there about a black swan that Gene McCarley's playing Billy in they were playing for $100. But for those guys, they played all the time. They might as well have been playing for $100,000, because Billy doesn't like to lose doing anything. So Gene hits a ball down the fairway near this pond. And there, Billy, knowing this, this huge black swan is down there and protects that territory like it's his front door, he roars up in a golf cart, scares the crap out of the black swan. And then he just bolts out of the driver's side of the cart over Gene. Gene is attacked by this black swan, and then he finally gets away from the black swan, and he goes over to his ball, and this black swan has taken the biggest dump in the world on Gene's ball. And it's 110 degrees in Vegas at the time. So it's just all that smell is just wafting up into Gene's nose. And he goes, Billy, I got to clean this ball. And Billy goes, you're not moving that ball.
Right.
You're not moving that ball. Let's play it where it lays, my friend. And I can just hear in that Kentucky accent is, oh, no, my friend, you're going to have to play that one where it lays. And so, Gene hits the ball. God knows how he got it on the green, but all that black swan shit just falls all over Gene's face, and he's got to go down to the pond and clean it all off. And that, but that's what that was for $100. I mean, Billy played rounds of golf where it was $300,000-$500,000 on the line between, you know, what the original bet was and all the presses, and he's playing guys that $300,000-$400,000 doesn't mean anything to them, like Jimmy Chagra, who is the biggest marijuana drug dealer in the United States, probably the North, well, you know, whatever, North America at the time, the Western Hemisphere. And, you know, Jimmy, $150,000, $200,000, $300,000 was tip money for Jimmy Chagra in Las Vegas. But, you know, Billy would play him for whatever it was because, you know, under pressure, you know, when it really counts, Billy was he is a really good golfer. And he'll be the first to tell you, oh, I'm playing to around 11 right now. Yeah. And then he shoots, you know, 74, you know, you're like 11. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Oh, you're going to have to get me two aside. You know, there's like, you know, Billy should be giving the guy three aside. He's trying to get two aside. And
yeah,
you know,
we've known a few of those guys, right? With those sandbaggers, if you will.
Oh God. Yeah. Well, he won the AT&T one year with Frederick Jakobsen, and he went in as an 11 because it was in the middle of, he was in the middle of the betting season. He had had some issues with his hands, and you know, he's literally playing to an 11. He gets this new super stroke putter from the rep for KJ Choi, who had won the event the year before. And Billy starts putting like, you know, Jack Nicklaus at that point in time. And Jakobsen and Billy win it, and they win it in a record number. I think it was like 31 under, but they set the record. And you can only imagine the comments, the sandbag, you know, the sandbagger. What a sandbagger. Gambler. Absolutely. From Vegas with an 11, sandbagger. But they did check the cards, and Billy's, you know, I think his best round was, if you know, an 83. But as you guys well know, if it's a stroke hole, Mr. Walters is very conscious of where the stroke holes are. So, you know, but they, you know, he's literally one of a kind. And he's probably lived, Bill is 77 years old now, and he's probably lived, I counted up, at least five or six different lives. And between, you know, growing up as he did in Kentucky, and then, you know, we could go on about all that, but then, you know, at 19, he's the most successful used car salesman in the state of Kentucky, in the history of the state of Kentucky. He's making $56,000 a year in commissions selling cars, and which is in today's dollars is north of $500,000. And he's spending every last dollar of it, every last dollar. And then some, right, you know, cause he's addicted to gambling, but he's also married. He got married at 17. The first girl he ever dated, seriously, got pregnant. And so Billy's in high school when he has a child and he's married and he's working two different jobs. One in the morning at a donut shop, a bakery, and another one after school at a Shell station from 3:30 until 11 o'clock at night. And he's barely, you know, he goes, I would have gotten a degree in sleep in classes because that's where I did most of my sleeping. But he's also, he's got this brain, this savant like math side to him that is really why he's been, you know, he's known as the most successful sports bettor of all time. I mean, the Michael Jordan of sports gambling,
right?
You know, a 36 year winning streak, which is, as you guys well know, that's if you can go 36 hours sometimes and have a winning streak, that's, you consider yourself fortunate. Billy did it for 36 straight years. And as you mentioned in the book, it's really a how-to, not only for, you know, there's two classes, these master classes, the basic master class, which is really Billy's basics, the betting tips, you know, shopping around, the importance of half points, the be cautious and careful using parlays and teasers. Most importantly, have a money management system. Discipline is critical in trying to figure out you know, how to keep your bankroll a bankroll. And then that second class, the advanced master class, is just, you know, Billy just pours out all his secrets and charts and graphs and numbers and factors that are just astonishing to me, that this is all that goes into deciding whether you want to bet a single, well, first of all, the value of a certain team, the power rating of a certain team, and then matching up the value of a game that, as you see it, against how Las Vegas sees it in terms of the lines. So it was, you know, it's like literally the Pope coming out to the veranda at St. Peter's Square and speaking to the masses about, you know, if you want to be a great Catholic, this is how you be a great Catholic. And there's Billy up there. You want a fighting chance in the, you know, against the sports books, this is how you do it. And to his credit, you know, he said, I'm not getting any younger. I want to give something back. And this is, it's all that in spades, to tell you the truth.
Let me ask you this, Armin. I'm in a dilemma right now because I got a member guest coming up, and I don't know if I should invite Billy, or should I get together with Billy for the opening Saturday of college football. I'm trying to figure out which would benefit me the most.
I think, well, it depends who you're playing against. You know, if you've got a couple of guys on the other side that are CEOs of, I don't know, hedge funds or something like that, you might want to go that way. Mm-hmm. But then I would say, I've sat with Billy when he's on the phone and he's looking at these three really big computer screens that are in front of him. And there's a there's a chapter called Chicken or Feathers, the second chapter in the book. After the prologue, so I guess it's the first chapter, where you really get a sense of what it's like to be sitting in that seat. And it's like air traffic control. You know, he is managing and just trying to decide, you know, A, how much money he's going to bet on a game. And when, you know, oftentimes he'll put money on the other side, he'll do what he calls a head fake, bet the other side because he wants to move the line in a direction to a certain number that he knows is very beneficial to him. Like, let's say it's -6.5 and he wants -7.5 because 7 is more valuable than 6.5 or 6. And then he'll pounce on that side of the game with, he might spend 50,000 noisily to, oh, that's a Billy Walters bet. And then, so people jump on that, move the line the other way, and then he'll put $500,000 on the side that he really wants. So I would say if for entertainment purposes and probably financial purposes, I'd go with the first weekend of the NFL college season, you know, put them both together and get into the, strap yourself into the co-pilot seat and see how things go.
I'm going to have to put Billy Walters on my speed dial, I'll tell you.
Oh,
that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Listen, Armin, it isn't until chapter 20 of Gambler that we start to learn the details of the relationship between Billy and Phil. They met at an AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am in 2006, and obviously Phil was fascinated by Billy right from the get-go.
Absolutely. They, 2 years later in 2008, I guess in 2006, they played together in the final round of the AT&T, and Billy was playing with Jakobsen and Phil was playing with an executive from Ford Motor Company. But all they did was talk sports the entire time. And kind of, I said, you know, almost oblivious to the beguiling beauty of Monterey Bay and Pebble Beach. And then when they saw each other again 2 years later at the Wachovia, now the Wells Fargo, Bill was in the locker room when Phil came up to him and said, hey, I hear you do partnerships. And Billy said, yes, if you have places that I can bet at limits higher than I can bet, we should talk. And so they did. And Phil had these phenomenal limits. I mean, limits that Billy couldn't get, you know, if his life depended on it. Bill's limits were 20,000 a game in college and 50,000 on the pros. And he said, even after the 50-50 split with Phil, Phil's limits of 400,000 on college at two offshore sports books and another 400,000 on the NFL at those books allowed him to at least double his limits. And so, I mean, those are enormous numbers. And then, you know, in that chapter, we detail, as I mentioned, you know, in 2011 alone, here's just one astonishing number. Phil made 3,154 bets. That's an average of not nearly 9 bets per day, 365 days in a year. So if you're talking about someone that liked action, that's a pretty good number to toss out. Or my other favorite one is on a single day in 2011, June 22nd, Phil made 43 bets on Major League Baseball games. He lost $143,500. But I don't know how you find 43 bets on Major League Baseball games in a single day.
That's a good point.
Yeah. You know, I'm like, if I make one bet, you know, and I don't bet, it'd be like, oh, okay, you know, who's going to win the game? Or what's the line on the money line on the game? But not Phil. He found some way to bet 43 different times. So anyways, that's, yeah, I mean, obviously the Phil story has gotten a lot of attention, and I think rightly so, because, you know, the numbers are pretty staggering. But also, Billy really wanted people to understand, the other second chapter is called 60 Minutes to 5 Years. That's the other chapter that Phil plays a prominent role in. And it's really the story behind how Billy was really targeted by the Southern District of New York and the FBI and the Justice Department, and the extraordinary lengths that the Southern District and the New York office of the FBI went to, including leaking a senior FBI agent, supervisory FBI agent by the name of David Chavez, repeatedly leaking secret grand jury testimony to reporters for the Wall Street Journal and New York Times to set up the stories that eventually led to Billy's indictment and eventually his conviction. And that was probably, for me, because of the stakes, was the hardest chapter to write. And it was written probably and rewritten probably 20 different times till we finally got it the way we wanted it. But I think it's one of the most compelling chapters, because when you realize the lengths that the government went to put a man who went into prison when he was 71 years old, you know, they didn't want to just convict him. They wanted to bury Billy Walters. And it's pretty clear that they would do just about anything, legal or illegal, to get to that means to that end.
Fascinating stuff with Armin Katan, co-writer of Gambler. So Armin, if you would specifically, what is it that Billy contends that Phil did not do or was unwilling to do that Billy believes would have kept him from going to jail?
Well, it's pretty simple. On two occasions, Phil had been interviewed by the FBI agents in August of 2013. And I've seen those copies of those reports where Phil unequivocally states to the FBI agents that Billy Walters never gave me any material non-public information, in essence, inside information on any stock, let alone Dean Food stock, which was at the center of Billy's insider trading case. Billy believes, and he'll take this belief to his grave, that if Phil, with the power of his personality and his celebrity, had done what he said he was going to do, which he had told both Bill and a very close mutual friend, that he would make a statement, a public statement, or he would testify at Bill's trial, that Bill never gave him any kind of inside information. The fact of the matter is, Phil didn't do that. He took the fifth. Phil had other problems related to another investigation, a money laundering investigation involving his sending money to a third party to pay off offshore debts to bookmakers. That person, Gregory Silvera, who we name in the book, and it's all public record, ended up spending, being sentenced to a year and a day in federal prison for a money laundering case charge. And Phil was in the middle of all that. Phil walked away scot-free. One of the reasons is that he hired a lawyer by the name of Gregory Craig, who just happened to be the former chief White House counsel for President Obama. So you can only imagine the kind of juice that Greg Craig had within the federal government. Phil walks away scot-free. Billy goes to prison. Greg Silvera goes to prison. So you can see where, in Bill's mind, where the animosity comes from and the really deep displeasure in Phil Mickelson and his personality. Because of the many things that Billy Walters is, he is a man of his word. When he tells you something, you can go to the bank on it. And when Phil said something, in the end, and look, we can argue whether it was in the, you know, was the right thing to do for Phil or not, but I think Billy's feeling is, don't tell me that you're going to do something of this importance to me. It's a life or death kind of situation, and then not do it. And that's where the friendship really fractured, and I can honestly say I could never see it being repaired.
Hey, Armin, is there a, in your opinion, is there a link, a thread, if you will, from Phil's penchant for gambling and the losses that he accrued to the formation of LIV Golf? If Phil, in other words, if Phil hadn't had major issues, losses with gambling, is it possible that the whole concept of LIV Golf may never have come across, because he really has been the face of it?
Oh, I think it's entirely possible. There's a scene in the book that I frankly wanted to open the book with, but it ends up opening that chapter, you know, the Lefty and Me chapter, where they're sitting out on the patio in Carlsbad, California in 2017. And, you know, Billy's just been convicted on 10 counts of insider trading. And the fact of the matter is he's got a monitor around his ankle. And, you know, he's trying to put his affairs in order before he goes off to federal prison camp in Pensacola, Florida. And, you know, they're sitting on outside, and it's a sparkling April day in the Pacific Ocean, and Bill's beautiful house there, and there's surfers in the water. And Bill thinks Phil's coming over because he owed Billy $2.5 million on bets that Phil had made outside of the partnership that Bill had made on Phil's behalf for various reasons. And he thinks he's going to come over and A, pay that money, but B, more importantly, apologize for not testifying on Bill's behalf in the trial that had just ended earlier that month. Oh no, Phil, being Phil, comes over to complain about the fact that, you know, his sponsorship with, he had lost his lucrative sponsorships with ExxonMobil and Barclays, and he had 25% cut on his deal with KPMG. And he was whining about the $32 million depreciation on his precious Gulfstream 4 jet. And Billy's thinking, wait a second, I'm the guy that's going to prison. I just spent $100 million in attorney's fees and in fines and in restitution. And I'm sitting here listening to you complain about your life. Yeah. So yeah, I think Phil was under a lot of financial pressure. I mean, you can't, I don't care how much money you're making. And Billy's belief is, look, he was making a lot of money. He can bet what he wants to make. But when you make, just on those bets we spoke about before, when you make $300 million in gross wagers over a 4 or 5 year period, just on, you know, 220 to win 200 and 110 to win 100, you've got to be under some kind of financial pressure. You know, we're not talking about tens of thousands of dollars here. We're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars. And, you know, when the Saudis offered him more than $200 million over what was it, a 4 year period, to really stand up and be the face of LIV Golf, I can see why Phil made that decision. And, you know, look, in a lot of ways, Phil is a very smart man, and what he said about the tour and the secrecy and where's all the money going and all that stuff, turned out to be quite true in a lot of ways. And, you know, in the end, you know, Phil's a very bright guy. I think part of the problem with Phil is he thinks he's the smartest guy in every room he walks into. And I can tell you, if you're in a room with Billy Walters, you're not the smartest guy in the room. I don't care how smart you are.
Yeah. Final question for me before Bob bids you farewell. Just the whole fact checking, the numbers are so outlandish. How did you go about fact-checking the claims that Billy made, et cetera, on such unbelievable figures over many, many years?
Well, if I could show you the bin that I have that's really in front of my desk here in Fairfield, Connecticut, it's chock full of binders that have not only the interviews I did with Bill, that I transcribed every word of every interview that I did with Bill, as I did with every other person I interviewed, because A, I wanted to make sure that I had Billy's voice in my head when I was writing, and B, I didn't want any mistakes. I didn't want it to be done computer generated or somebody that I was paying who might have heard something, because you have to really listen when Billy's talking. So that's number one. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of research. I think one of the reasons that Billy wanted me as a collaborator in this book is because I have a background in investigative reporting. I know what the bar is and how to meet that bar in terms of public record and public documents and how to follow a paper trail. And so when Billy would tell me something, the first thing I would do is I would go and look up on the internet, various places, and to just get the backstory of this person. So if Billy was saying that he had met this person in the 80s in Las Vegas, number one, I wanted to make sure the person was in Las Vegas in the 80s. And sure. So that number one would work. But in the end, I went through and I had a fabulous researcher, a woman named Caroline Keenan, and she and I fact-checked everything in that book at least three times. It was gone over by two libel lawyers, defamation lawyers. Billy's own attorney, Rick Wright, had a really close look at everything. So, you know, the Phil chapter where we're dealing with numbers, trust me, we have those numbers and can defend it. My standard has always been, if we're going to print something, can we defend it in a court of law? Sure. And how did we defend it? And so that was always the standard for me. And I think Billy really liked that, because there were times we talked and he would say something about somebody and I could have, it turned out to be true in red, you know, red, white, and blue. It was true. But I was like, Bill, do we really want to go after this person? Do we really want to, do you need to settle this score right now at this part of the book? And to his credit, and it took us a little while to get there, but to his credit, Billy became very focused on, let's just move the story ahead. Let's get people to turn pages. Because in the end, his story is so inspirational in so many ways. You talk about a man who was, you know, addicted to gambling with a capital A, who had a real drinking problem, who the over-under, they were bets when Billy was 35, his four best friends, they had this bet for $5,000 each on the over-under and how long Billy would live. And everybody took the under, you know, nobody took the over. And then when he's 36, he's been arrested for bookmaking in Louisville. That's a great story. And his very, very skilled criminal defense attorney, Frank Haddad Jr., goes, Billy, you got two choices. You can either stop booking or you can get out of town. And Billy goes, he gets out of town. Well, where does he go? He goes to the only place where gambling is legal in the country, Las Vegas, which we say in the book, you know, Billy's a total gambling addict at that point in time, and he's a drunk. Yeah. And it's like, I wrote it. That's a place that, you know, that eats addicts for lunch and dreams for dinner. You know, what are the odds that you're gonna thrive, survive, let alone thrive in Vegas? Billy said yesterday, somebody asked him, and he put the number at 5 million to 1. And, you know, that's a Billy Walters number. I think that's a really good number, 5 million to 1, that somebody would, A, end up as successful as Billy has been. I mean, he's a multi-millionaire many times over, and not just because of gambling, but, you know, at one time he owned 13 golf courses and 22 co-owner or partner in 22 automotive dealerships, on top of all the investments that he had made in the stock market, which we talk about in the book, and you get to understand how Billy thinks. I couldn't have asked for a better, you know, I had worked with Mike Singletary on his autobiography, Catfish Hunter on his, George Lopez, the actor and comedian on his, And I've met a lot of, you know, both in sports and news, a lot of famous people who are very successful. I've never met anybody like Billy Walters. And I say that with a great deal of admiration, because he, in the end, you'll see, guys, you know, Billy talks about when you meet your maker, you know, who there's nothing left there. It's just you and, you know, the person above. And, you know, were you a good person? Did you help other people? And you see in this book that, you know, Billy Walters puts his money where his heart is and has helped hundreds, if not thousands of people in their lives anonymously or quietly. And that's a part of Billy that I really, really, really like.
Well, it's been an honor to have you on the air with us. You made Golf Radio history. First time Kelly and I ever talked about a black swan playing a major role.
I think that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Hey, when I heard that story, I fell out of my chair laughing. I just, and I got it from Gene, too. The thing was, I couldn't wait to talk to Gene because I go, Gene, this can't be true. Oh, he goes, oh, let me tell you about it. You know, he's from Mississippi. So he launches into a story. He's funny as hell. And I was like, okay, this is, and it's one of the few stories, and I'll shut up. It's one of the few stories that's italicized in the book because it's so good. I let Gene tell it because Gene tells it better than Billy tells it. And so, yeah, it's if I ever see a black swan, I'm not getting within 100 yards.
I love it.
Well, Armin, please tell us where people can buy this book.
Well, it's on Amazon right now. It's as we speak, it's the number two best-selling hardcover nonfiction book in the country. And, you know, certainly today, Barnes & Noble and all the independent bookstores, which I spend a lot of time in. So thank you, guys. Kelly, Bob, I had a good time talking to you two. So thanks for having me on, and thanks for all the kind words about the book.
When you make the best performing golf balls in the world, your biggest competition is yourself. And now the golf ball that sets the standard for every other has raised the bar again. New Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are longer and more consistent with unrivaled control. Outperform with new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Bob, I'm still like shaking my head in kind of disbelief just in terms of all the numbers that Armin threw around there. Look, for me, one of the early parts of that book indicated, as I said in the interview with Armin, that Billy Walters has as much as $20 million in play on a typical college football NFL weekend per day. So the amount of money is just astronomical. And I'm not sure how he does it. He's lived a crazy life. And certainly the parts with Phil, for any golfer, I think this is a must read. This is a book that you have to have. And if you're interested in learning how to become a really good gambler at a really high level, this is it.
Yeah, and Kelly, according to Armin Katan, who's just a marvelous writer, he's been the best for a long, long time. The most fascinating aspect, according to Armin, of Billy Walters, how did he survive? Hmm. He was an alcoholic, and he was in Las Vegas.
Exactly.
I mean, that's a lethal combination.
Alcoholic and a big-time gambler, and he goes to Vegas, and somehow not only did he survive, but he thrived. A great book. We thank Armin Katayan very much. Wish him well with the new book, Gambler. Next week, Denny McCarthy, who came oh so close to making the tour championship this year, but is headed for lots of big days ahead, will be our guest. For Bob Bupka, Kelly Elbin signing off. Musings on Golf.